हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Okay, text 12, Yoga Nidra. This is bottom of 24. Yoga Nidra, the divine sleep of Mahavishnu. The Supreme Lord is called Narayana because the waters of the Karana ocean arise from his eternal form. Narayana is non-different from Shankarshan. This Mahavishnu lies in Yoga Nidra in this ocean. Countless avatars reside in him. This verse explains more about the position of Karana Daksha Vishnu and his activities, or lack thereof. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says what Hitakura explains. Yoga Nidra, divine sleep, is spoken of as an ecstatic trance, which is of the nature of the bliss of the true subjective personality. The above-mentioned Ramadevi is Yoga Nidra in the form of Yoga Maya. And so, therefore, he's interacting with his internal potency in the form of sleep. Right? Like that. So, it's not that.
So try this at home. yeah,
these are all professionals. Great. So how do you say? Yeah, so there's no such thing as him technically doing nothing, right? So he's there, how do you say? Even he's asleep, he's still interacting with his internal potency. So then she'll never get grumpy that he's ignoring her, right? It works out very nicely. As will become evident in future verses, it is called Nidra, or sleep, because Vishnu is indifferent to the material world. Secondly, it's called Yoga because he is blissfully absorbed in his spiritual pastimes. Jiva Goswami comments on this verse as follows. The water known as the ocean of the Karana water appeared from Narayana. This water is non-different from Narayana or Sankarsana. This means that this form lying on the Karana ocean is a portion or amsa of the Sankarsana of the Chaturvyuha, situated as Avarana, protective deities in Goloka. Because on the four sides, then you have the four deities. His activity is described as Yoga Nidra, being completely absorbed in the bliss derived from a spiritual form. The derivation of the word Narayana is as follows. The word Apa and Nara are synonymous for water, since the waters are considered the sons of Nara, the primeval male, or Mahavishnu. Since these waters take shelter, Ayana, of Mahavishnu, from the ancient past, he is called Narayana. Vishnu Purana 146. Yeah, so it's interesting is that the water is how do you say? Virajas expanded from the Yamuna. Right? And the Yamuna is non-different from Vishaka. Right? So and Vishaka is this aspect of, you could say, the principle of the expansion of dealing with the arrangements. Right, so then Yoga Nidra, Yoga Maya is in that same, you could say, position of like tattva, of what they do. But it's just one's arranging, different aspects of the arrangement, you could say. So then, like this, then the Lord is interacting with his potencies. So as Sankarsana, then you have this one aspect of this particular side. Does that make sense? Like the left, you know, instead of the right. You know, so. Does that make sense?
You mentioned how the Rasa dance is the center of the universe, where everything expands from that. So Lalita, the sun god, is on earth.
Yeah, no, this would be more the aspect of Visha.
Okay, so I mean...
Yes,
so
because it's there. It's because, in other words, here we have the shadow. The shadow is not... it is different. And it's not, you know, conscious of that, so because neither is our body. Right, our body is dead matter, so the shadow is dead matter. But on the transcendental platform, you won't have that. Does that make sense? So the internal potency, being conscious, then that shadow created is also conscious. Does that make sense? So that's what that's the aspect you're dealing with. So then, there another aspect of that would be Yogamaya. Is that right? Because you have the Ladini potency, but you have Srup Shakti is Radharani, but then there's also Yogamaya Srup Shakti, in other words, she's arranging everything. So Radharani is interacting with Krishna, and Yogamaya is arranging the situations and facilities for that interaction. This makes sense?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, 13, the universal creation. The jivas in combination with Prakriti had been resting within the hair holes of Sankarsana, Mahavishnu. They then take the form of golden eggs, the primitive forms of universes, covered with the five great elements before they combine. Footnote 12. The golden eggs are shells of universes composed of the elements in an uncombined state. Mahatattva alone does not form the eggs. The elements arise in the following manner. Mahatattva manifests ahankara in sattva, rajas, and tamas. The sattva portion gives rise to mind and sense devatas. The rajas portion gives rise to the senses. The tamas portion gives rise to the sense objects and the five gross elements. The elements in an uncombined state form into coverings of the universe. By the will of Vishnu within the universe, the five gross elements then combine with each other and become functional for making the planets and bodies within the universe. This is described in Brahma Samhita, verse 19. Because the coverings are, it's just mind, right? Just earth, just water. So you just have that. Then within, then they combine and then you get what we call the Adibhuta manifestation, right? The secondary manifestation that Brahma creates. Right? Before that, you're dealing with the primary, so it's just the principles of creation. So all the elements are there, and the potencies and what they can all do, like what you can get from the combinations. But it's only manifest when Brahma then does the creation. Yes?
Ahankara is tamakura, isn't it?
No, ahankara is, it means the principle is false. Ego. Tamagun is ignorance, so not knowing the reality. So they're you know, how you say it, well connected.
Yes.
You know, like, let's say, anger and frustration are, you know, very friendly.
Close friends.
Yeah. Does that make sense? So the ahankar is, you can say it's due to ignorance, you have the false ego.
Yes.
But at the same time, as there is, because as he mentioned there, the ignorance in the jiva, that aspect is eternal. It's always been there. But that's because of the potential. So they can either function within the internal or the external. So they function within the internal, then they're dealing with the transcendental. They deal with the external, then that will be according to the modes. Because the jiva is always under, is an extension of the Lord's potency. Right?
Yes.
And that potency then has these aspects of the internal, the external, and the junction between them. So we're being the junction means that that potential of going either way is there. So that is eternal. That's the nature of the jiva. So you come this way, then you get the reactions of that. You go that way, you get the benefit of that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
This is a hankering sattva.
A hankering sattva. Because you're dealing within the material function. It's all based on false ego, because that's what the glance includes, the false ego, it includes the jivas, and includes time. So therefore that combination, when that's, because the first thing is false ego. So when that's combined with these, you get these different levels, like the mind, the intelligence, and the gross. So the mind will develop that. So that's that, the mind, the demigods, everything. Then you get the senses, the sense objects, then you get the gross, the adibhuta that you see. In one sense you can say that whole thing is adibhuta. Because it's just the subtle and gross elements of it, depending on how you're using the term. Is that right?
Yep. Yes.
Yes.
So what's the connection between the polluted consciousness and tamas?
Polluted consciousness means that it's just like you have the primary and secondary creation. Mm-hmm. Primary being the principle, secondary meaning the manifestation. So the primary, if it's there, there will be the manifestation within the material. Does that make sense? But unless that primary is there, you can't get the secondary. But they, in other words, the secondary is it's just the manifestation of the primary. Right. So working with the three kinds of false ego in the mind, intelligence, and the element, or means the body, and these kind of things, that what you see, the dravya. That's then the three kinds of false ego. Because if there's no false ego, then the modes just mean what you're working with. There's no control. You know what I'm saying? The pure devotee will be working with his body, but he's not controlled by the body. He's working with the senses, but not controlled by them. He's working with the mind, but not controlled by them. Because there is no false ego. So there is a manifestation of these things, because that's just how it works. But he's technically not involved in the material world. He's functioning in the spiritual world, though situated here. You understand? Well then, yes. Does that make sense? But the materialist, he's situated here and controlled by these things. And then in between you have the jnani, he's situated himself where he's not functioning with the body, mind, and words. But, and so he's in the liberated or the spiritual position, but there's still the false ego that I'm the controller and enjoyer, so he's going to enjoy that position of being spiritually situated. So they don't make it into the spiritual world. Right? Does that make sense? So the karmi and jnani is one situated in the material world and controlled by the material world. Right? On the primary and secondary platform. Right? The impersonalists, they're situated spiritually, but they're still controlled by illusion. Right? So the devotee, so in the same ways, you can be situated either in the spiritual or the material, but still be in material consciousness, right? And similarly, the devotee can be situated either and be in spiritual consciousness. Does that make sense? So the impersonalists, because they're situated in the Brahman, but their consciousness is not actually on transcendence. Really, means they're on a partial, means they understand the nature that Brahman's eternal, but they don't understand that this Brahman is coming from a person, so they're in ignorance. And it's not because of devotion, so it can't be yogamaya. So it has to be mahamaya. Right? Right? But the devotee, because they see the connection to Krishna as a person, and they function in that capacity in devotion, then they are functioning within Yogamaya, the internal potency, even though they're here, because the internal and external potency are the same person. So does that make sense? So you get the same effect. You know, it's just like we were saying in the morning. The lady's dressed up in her police outfit and all that, and just about to go out the door, and the kid asks, "Where's my lunch?" You know, so she goes over in that form and gives the lunch and this and that and says, you know, be good at school today and all that kind of jazz. You know, or drives them off to school and they get, you know, in the police car and that drops them off at the school, right? You understand? So if the same relationship can go on, it's just that the technical capacity is that of the other. Does that make sense?
Yes. Just trying to figure out what is the mentality. If the mentality of the ahankara is under control and joy, then the mentality of the guru consciousness is just the generic purusha bhava.
It's generic. Because
okay.
It's not, it's just, one wants to enjoy the Lord's energy. But it doesn't have to be specific to anything. It's just that I am enjoying that. Krishna's enjoying. Why can't I enjoy this? Right? That kind of mood. Rather than the nature of I'm servant.
Can it appear in the spiritual world?
Can it appear in the spiritual world? Now, how do you define spiritual world?
Well, you know, Krishna is trying to enjoy it.
No, but how do you define the spiritual world? Don't get into other things. What's the existence that you're talking about?
Freedom from
ego, sorry. No, okay. But that doesn't define the spiritual world. That defines a devotional service. You understand where the problem comes up? This whole bewilderment on the soul, where it comes from, how it falls in the world, is the main problem comes because who's discussing this can't define that question. You understand? The point is Brahman is the spiritual world. Is it not? You know, it's counted as part of the triquadrantal, you know, aspect of the cosmos. Yes? So then, that's the spiritual world. So the Brahma body is there, but he still has the idea, I'm the controller and enjoyer. So is he actually in the spiritual world? Physically, yes. But in consciousness? No. You understand? Gokul. It's non-different from Gokul and Goloka. Right? But the demons are there. Are the demons in pure transcendental consciousness? No. So they're in the spiritual world. Understand? The problem comes in the definition of the spiritual world.
Spiritual world is the consciousness.
No, it's also more than just the consciousness. The point is when you say about having, generating that, what's the problem in generating that in the spiritual world? The jiva makes his choice. Where is he going to make his choice? Already in the material world? But exclusively in the spiritual world? Where's the junction between the two? Yeah, you have to be situated on the transcendental platform, but in contact with both. That's the aspect of the spiritual world that you fall from. That makes sense. Yes.
So the definition of spiritual world will be free from anger.
Means it depends. No, the spiritual world means where there is no, specifically you could say, the influence of the three modes of nature. right? But the difficulty is unless the living entity is interested, surrenders to the Lord, and wants to serve the Lord in devotion, you actually won't be a permanent resident there. Like Durvasa Muni, when he's running from Sudarshan Chakra, he goes to the spiritual world and sees Vishnu. But he's not there for long. Like that. You know, the four Kumaras are visiting the spiritual world. But they're not, functioning in devotion. Right? So their position there is just to go have a visit and check it out and come back. You understand? But in the process, they surrendered to the Lord and then took up that position of devotion. Now they're qualified to remain there.
So to stay there, you need devotion.
Yes, you can't remain in the spiritual world without devotion.
But should it be pure analog or pure devotion still?
Either one will keep you there. So we're the ones that didn't have either. So we're here.
The five systems that are not Vedanta, do they deal with Yogamaya and Mahamaya terms?
Not really.
No.
No.
How can they?
They might have some kind of concept that there is something that you have the spiritual, because as we see, the yoga maya can function on that platform of Brahman.
Yes.
Because that's the position of situation. Mm. But they're not looking at it that there is Purusha and Prakriti on the transcendental platform. They're only looking at Purusha and Prakriti within the material.
Yes.
And so they're trying to create that balance again within the Purusha and Prakriti within the material.
Yeah.
So they're trying to get it back to Pradhan. You know, because in Pradhan, then Mahavishnu is there and sleeping away and everything's going very nicely. Right? So they think that's the perfection. They don't understand is that, you know, it's beyond that is where the perfection is. So they don't go beyond really that point of the primary creation. Because this, the Yoga Nidra, this is all still part of the whole primary creation element. This is just the neutral state in between.
Yes.
Right? But the whole reason that Mahavishnu is here is for the purpose of creating the worlds. So it already has that element, as we said before, of that linga. It already has that aspect. Right? Because the linga means is that the potential for that creation of all the living entities and that whole element and working with the material energy and yoni as the source of all the forms and everything that the living entities are going to work with.
Some purpose.
Yeah, it means it has the creative element. So you're still going to have the linga and yoni aspect, the masculine and feminine, when you're dealing, but this is beyond because they're transcendental.
Yes.
But then that manifests within the secondary creation as something that you can see, hear with your mundane eyes, right?
Yes.
But there, that's beyond because you're dealing with Vishnu. That makes sense? Yeah. The jiva. Oh, okay. We finished the footnote. Okay. This verse describes how the universes arise from Mahavishnu. The seed exists within the hair holes of Sankarshan, Mahavishnu. The seed refers to the jivas who will be placed in the womb of Prakriti. First being in a subtle state, this combination of jivas, then become situated within the hair holes of Sankarshana. Then they take the form of golden eggs covered by the five gross elements in an uncombined subtle state. Brahma says in the 10th canto, what am I? A small creature measuring seven spans of my own hand. Seven. One, two, three, four. Oh, okay, they have a different proportion.
Is it normal?
What
is it normal?
No, it's not a matter of normal. It depends on who you are.
Okay.
It's silpashat. That's why it is in the deities. You can't just make them up. There's proportions.
Okay.
And it goes by the span of their hand.
Okay.
like that. I think we work on eight or something. Because it's one, two, and then that's four, and then six, eight. So then, yeah. So they must have, they have bigger hands or something. I'm enclosed in a pot-like universe covered by material nature, the total material energy, false ego, ether, air, fire, water, and earth. Right, one, two, three, six, seven, eight, right, the eight coverings. And what is your glory? Unlimited universes pass through the pores of your body just as particles of dust pass through the opening of a screen window. Did you catch? I mean, just as one subtle little cultural element here. This is spoken by Lord Brahma 5,000 years ago, you know, referring, that means there's always been screened windows.
There's always been bugs.
And there's always been bugs and there's always been dust. Yeah, yeah, otherwise why have a screened window unless there's a bug?
Material nature and total material energy.
One's Mahatma, one's Prakriti.
Okay. Yeah, covered by material nature, the total material energy. So Mahatma is the whole thing. So you're encased in that because you're not getting out of the Mahatma. Right? Then you're going to go from the Mahatma vapor. The Mahatma. You're not going to get out of that without the grace of the Lord. Then you're specifically covered by then the shell of the universe, which is pradhan, is the outside. Because you might be able to relate to earth or water or fire, air, ether on its own. But what about them all combined where it's homogenous? You've never bumped into that one before. So.
That's pradhan.
That's pradhan. And it's 10 times thicker than the last one, so it's always going to be.
So in the middle of the egg is mahat?
No, mahat's basically, you could say, the whole entity of all the universes, the whole material process of creation.
So mahat is greater than pradhan.
Because it includes, mahat includes the jivas, time, and false ego. You know, this enjoying mood, which is, those are beyond the material nature. So it's material, if you take pradhan and those three, mix it, then you get mahat.
So material nature is pradhan.
Yeah.
Yes.
In the third canto, the universe is also described. This phenomenal world is expanded to a diameter of 4 billion miles. As a combination of 8 material elements, transformed into 16 further categories, within and without, as follows. The layers or elements covering the universe are each 10 times thicker than the one before, and all the universes clustered together appear like atoms in a huge combination. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.11, 40, 41. Okay, so 4 billion is within what we're functioning. Half of that is water. So there's only 2 billion in which we're working. Right?
This is not 4 billion, like...
But either way, it's a sphere.
Mm-hmm.
So however you take the four... It means you can take it any direction you like and you get 4 billion. Yes. But when you fill it with half with water, it tends to be on the bottom half.
Yes.
Yeah. No, but it's on the bottom half. So we're functioning in the upper 2 billion. So that means 4 billion. So the first layer is 10 times thicker than that.
Yes. 10 times.
And then each one's 10 times, so you can see is by the time you get to the outside covering, the 4 billion miles is pretty small.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Each egg is like that?
Each one, yes. And we're the smallest, so we're 4 billion. Mm-hmm. So Brahma only needs 4 heads. So it would appear that 1 billion miles, 1 head.
Okay.
Right? So if you have 100 heads, he has 100 billion miles. So it's bigger. And there's 10,000, 100,000, million. So we're the smallest of all the universes. Somehow or another, that's the way it works.
Small
is beautiful, yeah.
Way to see the soul.
Yeah, yeah.
You got nothing to be proud of here.
Yeah.
Those eggs, they float in Brahmaji.
On the causal ocean, which is transcendence. It shouldn't float on the causal ocean.
No, my mind is just trying to imagine.
No. Yeah, they float. They come out and then they float there. That's why then it says when you leave the universe, you cross the Dhiraja.
That picture that the universe is coming from the forest.
Yes.
The eggs.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so that's basically what it looks like.
Cool.
Just, you know, you can only put so many, but there's unlimited of them. But that's what's happening.
All right. Mm. So Mahavishnu, he's lying on the causal ocean.
Yes.
And then the eggs, like.
Yes.
Yeah. Just to really have to think.
He seems to be on an island, let me see.
No, he's just there in the ocean. Because the water itself has come from him. And technically it's his consort. At the same time as in that sleep, he's absorbed in that yoga nidra, so that's yoga maya. Not so much. It seems Garbhadaksha Vishnu is on Ananta Sesha, Kiridaksha. It means that aspect is there, but it seems to be there's the aspect where he's not. So he floats anyway, you know, without salt.
The causal ocean has no salt.
It doesn't have that much salt. Yeah. So. Text 14 and 15. No?
Yes.
Yeah. And this, and the difference also here is this one's conscious and alive, you know, because it's the internal potency, and the other one is quite dead. Yeah. In fact, it's famous for being dead.
Yes.
Text 14 to 15. Prototypical guna avatars. Eternal Mahavishnu, the soul of the universes, with countless heads, enters into each of these universal eggs by means of expanded form of Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. From his left side, Mahavishnu created Vishnu, and from his right side, Brahma. He created the effulgent form of Shiva from between his eyebrows. So it seems Shiva always appears from eyebrows. That's how it works. Yes. Okay.
Shiva's third eye. Shiva's third eye.
Yes, yes. It's just on that is that the element of Shiva Goswami explains how these forms first manifest outside the universe, then expand inside. The forms mentioned here, created outside the universe by Mahavishnu, are the sources of their further expansion situated within each universe. Just as these forms exist within each universe, they also exist outside, presiding over the universes as a whole. Among these forms, Prajapati, mentioned in this verse, is the form of Hiranyagarbha, not the four-headed Brahma, right? Because Brahma is the last of these. manifestations. Does that make sense? Because you see is that you're getting the creative element, that Brahma here, but that means Hiranyagarbha. Right? And so the Sanskrit must use the words Prajapati. So Prajapati, Hiranyagarbha, Brahma, they're all the same, because they do the same function of creation. So this means that there are the manifestations of these three outside, because Mahavishnu means the mood of creator, maintainer, and destroyer. Right? So creator means the Brahma aspect, maintainer is the Vishnu aspect, and destroyer is the Shiva aspect. Doesn't make sense?
Yeah. No, they're
prototypes. Prototypes, but it means that they're, because Mahavishnu is these three aspects, but then there's the element of them being, how you say, perceivable as three entities. Right? Because the Lord expands, just like you can see Balaram. Right? Or you can see in Dwarka, Balaram and Prajumna and Aniruddha. Right? So here you can see these three aspects. Then they're the prototype based on this principle. That's what's happening in the universe. So this is what is the primary creation. Right? Does that make sense? So the primary creation, because generally we only deal with it within the universe. But it actually goes beyond, because it's starting with Mahavishnu. So Mahavishnu is technically is the Lord of the primary creation. Like that. Mm-hmm. But now how that will be defined, you know, is then by Garbhodakshaya and Kiradaksha, how it's defined, how it's operated. Right? But it's Brahma is then the... Yes? Because that then is within, that's the lotus, because that's come from the Lord. That's that element. Then, taking that blueprint, Brahma then creates the phenomenal world. Right? So that's why this chapter is... I mean, in the Bhagavatam, the second canto is the cosmic creation. While the first one is primary creation, because it talked about the Lord, Vishnu, his expansions, his avatars. That's all the primary creation. Yes?
So the lotus and the Brahma, it's within the...
That's within the universe.
Within the egg.
That's within the egg. So in other words, that element's outside, that comes inside, and then Brahma manifests from that original from inside.
And Shiva?
Shiva, he comes out from Brahma's eyebrows.
And Vishnu is the god of the Shiva.
Yes.
That one. It's a big
one. Yes. Yeah. Because then he maintains the universe. And then the super soul maintains each individual living entity. So it's just a matter of that element of you have the whole material manifestation, the material, this material sky. You have the spiritual sky and you have the material sky. So Karana Dakshaya Vishnu is the super soul, you can say, of the material sky. And so that material sky has all the elements of the material creation. So you have the primary element. You have Karana Daksha Vishnu himself, and then the aspect of the mood of Vishnu to maintain, the mood of Shiva to destroy, the mood of Brahma to create. Right? Then all the elements that all the elements are there, that primeval creation. Right? So then from there it goes into then each of the universes then gets, you know, a portion of that potency. Right? Then that potency is what runs it. Now Brahma then is the one designated to create the forms that we see. But the power is still coming from that portion of that primary creation that is there in the overall Mahatattva. But then within each universe you have that aspect because that's what's entered. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say you have a factory, and the factory has a concept of what's going to happen. And so then they have everything that's required for that. Then you have the individual manifestation of that product. You know what I'm saying? So when they're sitting in the boardroom and looking at plans and that on the board, you know, is that what it's called, the boardroom? Because all they do is look at boards. Are they very bored?
Yeah,
very bored. So whatever. So they're looking at the concept of their what they're going to produce. But every product that is produced will be based on that. So there has to be the conception. There has to be those who do that. Then there's what happens within the individual universe. So the primary creation is that original. And then you have the prototype, what do you call it? Guna avatars. Is that
okay? Huh. These three forms, are they eternally manifest, or are they also manifesting and being manifest?
No, they're eternally. They're eternally there because Mahavishnu is these three. You know what I'm saying? He has these three moods. In Vaikuntha, there's only one mood, I'm God. Because there is no beginning and no end, so you're only, Vishnu is only maintaining. That's all you have. But here you have the element of creation and destruction. So he is those three moods. So depending upon what you're talking about, then you'd be talking about one of these aspects. He's the creator of the universe, so that's the Brahma aspect. Does that make sense? He's the maintainer of the words, the Vishnu aspect. He's the destroyer of them. You know. Does that make sense? But because all this is dealing with the living entity being covered by their false ego, that they're going to act in connection with material energy, and therefore the need for material energy being manifest, that potential of doing that, that's Mahavishnu, that's Linga. So the aspect of Shiva. Does that make sense? Yeah.
In the analogy of the factory that you mentioned,
sometimes the analogy of
the factory and the
board,
sometimes you have one person who has a vision for a company, and within his vision is already managers and everything like that.
Yes.
But then only he manifested it's necessary
on his hands. Yeah, with time. You know, you get, that's the thing, is that we're dependent on others and other things to create the facility. But Krishna creates his own facility. You know, it's like, you know, he's not going to lay on the floor. It's more cool to lay on water. So he manifests the water himself. And he's able, and his own potency holds it up, so it doesn't have any problem. You know what I'm saying? So he just does it himself. That's why it's called pastime. There's no need, but it's just he has a desire, so he does.
Okay. Another question concerning, we were mentioning the need of vision to be in this pastime. Is it to enhance the pleasure that after Jiva went through all of this, then the surrendered souls which go back had a different taste for him?
No, it's a matter of the natural position is all jivas would choose the spiritual world. But, you know, some choose here. So then it's just a matter of getting them there. So all jivas will go there. It's just there's a process. You know, so it's not a matter that the jivas who went to the material world and they get back to the spiritual world are, you know, better or more tasty.
Not better, but different
things. No, not at all. It's the process of elevating yourself to Krishna consciousness that gives pleasure to Krishna. But that's not why it's being done. It's that because of the nature of the jiva that he can choose, so that means there's going to be some percentage that choose this side. And so therefore you have the whole arrangement for those jivas on this side.
So then the question which arises, therefore, the need to have the option of choice is so that you can have the option of decision, right? Otherwise it's just...
Yes.
Obliged, yeah. You couldn't choose.
See, the whole point is you're situated in the spiritual world, in the pastimes, you know, in the Boma Lila. But the point is depending upon the mentality means that depends upon which aspect of the Lord you're identifying with. So that defines, therefore, the reciprocation. So does that make sense? Someone's standing in front of the deity, right? And they see someone who just fulfills their desires. You know what I'm saying? So how does Krishna interact? Only on that level. Now, if they see him, formally as God, he reciprocates that way. If they see him as Radha and Krishna, then he reciprocates that way. Same person. You understand? So being situated there, depending upon which mentality, which direction you go, means how the Lord reciprocates. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes, okay. Go back to... We'll see if we can revisit. Okay, now let us say is now... When you get home, you have the police lady, right? Okay. Now the husband happens to be a writer, let's say a journalist. Okay. Now the child, when it grows up, depending upon which direction it goes, then you'll say, you know, who they're basically from. Does that make sense? He does really well in language and writing and all that. Then what will you say? He's the son of
his father.
But, you know, he's always, you know, seeing that nobody does any nonsense at school, always protecting kids, and, you know, how you say like this and that, and, you know, doesn't mind, he's good at sports and this and that. Then he'll be the son of
the mother.
Does that make sense? So the whole point is this whole thing. The jivas coming from Mahavishnu, from Baladev, from like this, that's depending upon how you deal. You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of what we do, how we relate, what is the relationship. But we always try to put it into the Adi Bhautik. What is the form? What's the thing? What's the fix the facts? That's why it can't be understood as a topic. You're not going to understand how the soul has gotten here if it's going to be according to time, space, and situations. It's about mentality. It's about the mood. It's about what endeavor you made, therefore how Krishna reciprocates. Understand? Because looking at everything from situation, that's what we're conditioned to looking at it, rather than what's the mood of interaction. Now, you have to have a situation, of course, as foundational, but the point is what you're going to do. Does that make sense? Yeah. That makes sense? Yeah. Makes sense. Okay.
Going first, second.
Okay. Okay. The forms mentioned here, created outside the universe by Mahavishnu, are the sources of the further expansion situated within each universe. Just as these forms exist within each universe, they also exist outside, presiding over the universes as a whole. Among these forms, Prajapati mentioned in this verse is the form of Hiranyagarbha, not the four-headed Brahma, which will be described later. Hiranyagarbha is the creator of various devatas dwelling within the covers of the universe. These forms should be understood to reside in the water surrounding Mahavishnu. So there's a whole scene going on there. There's this formal scene, but then there's also just the activities, the pastime. Just like when you deal with, like before it was describing Goloka, so it's describing as a form of yantra. Is how everything's situated and everything. But then when the pastimes, it's... So you have the yoga pit, how Radha and Krishna are situated with all their associates. Right? Then there's the past time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we may see one thing, but the other thing is going on. That's why when Krishna and Arjuna go to visit Mahavishnu, there's a palace and all kinds of things. It's not that, you know, they had to go and wake him up. You know, and because they woke him up, then there was no creation for, you know, so many times, you know, like this and that. And that. Huh?
Well, when then he's lying on his, in his yoga nidra, it's part-time?
Part-time? No, that's going on. At the same time, he has his palace and he's there hanging out with friends.
And creation, the gas coming out simultaneously.
Yeah, it's all happening.
He's talking and they're coming out?
That's weird. You forget the element of just, you have all these, you can do all these different things at one time. It's not that he's sitting there and they're all coming out and, you know, people, you're trying to talk and they're kind of, what are you saying? Like that, you know. And then, you know, Shiva comes out with the eyebrows and, you know, like that. You know. So you have that aspect functioning and you have the other aspect functioning. Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that all these things can happen at once. That's why we've been introduced to Achintaveda Tattva, just to make it so much easier.
Can we then go a little back?
Can we go back?
Here it's mentioned that there are different personalities, like Hiranyagarbha, Brahma, they're different.
Yes.
We spoke in the morning about four and two, like Shambhu, Sadashiva, and Sankarshan. Are they different personalities, or like Mahavishnu can lie down and still have his own palace as one person with different manifestations, not different personalities?
The thing is these are different aspects of him, his personality. So then, just as, what is Vishnu? Is a separate entity than Krishna?
Mm-hmm.
Means, is he different? Can Krishna be functioning in his pastimes and at the same time, you know, be performing pastimes in Dwarka?
Yes.
But Dwarka Krishna is Krishna just manifesting a certain amount of his mood. You understand? So, therefore, Mahavishnu means the whole aspect of mood of creator, maintainer, destroyer. So, Hiranyagarbha means only the aspect of creation. Vishnu means only the aspect of maintenance. Right? Shiva means only the aspect of destruction. You know what I'm saying? So these original then personalities are there. They're expanding from him, but they're still non-different from him.
They exist on their own, yes.
They exist, yes. But at the same time, he exists on his own, where everything is him. Is that yeah. Okay. Okay. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says what he talks or explains how the initial forms differ from the subsequent ones. Hiranyagarbha, the seminal principle, the portion of the Supreme Lord, right? So it's a portion. That's why you always say portion of a portion, like that. The portion of the Supreme Lord is the prime progenitor who is different from the four faced Brahma. This same Hiranyagarbha is the principle of seminal creative energy of every Brahma, belonging to each of the infinity of universes. So the potency that every Brahma has to create is coming from this one Hiranyagarbha. Mm-hmm. Right? Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, does that make sense? Just like the one, how do you say it? Every Shiva in the universe, he gets his power from the original one Shiva. Huh? It's the next Shiva. Yeah, okay. It's always the fun. You have to explain it before it's been explained.
Yes.
And then you check and see, okay, wasn't bad. Yeah. No, close, not bad. Okay. The same Hiranyagarbha is the principle of seminal creating energy of every Brahma. The divine masculine manifested halo, Shambhu, is a plenary manifestation of this prototype, Shambhu. The same as the divine, primary divine masculine generative principle, Shambhu, whose nature has already been described. Okay, does that make sense? So that means then there's also the aspect of Vishnu, who then appears in the universe as Garbhodakshay.
Yeah.
Right? Because there has to be that principle of maintaining the... So there's maintaining the universes, and then he expands and maintains the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He creates the universes, and then he expands and creates within the universe. He destroys the universes, he destroys within the universe. Right? So he doesn't, you know. So he sees that the destruction just destroys from within, and it also gets breathed back in. So then, you know, you try to get a double, complete total.
And this happens simultaneously.
Meaning
the destruction and the when
it's also all in the breathing. When he breathes in, it's destruction. When he breathes out, it's creation. So in other words, within 3/4 of a second. You get the creation of Mahavishnu. You get the creation, the maintenance, and the destruction. Just like you breathe out, there's more than you breathe in. So that's how long, you know, the 151 trillion years of, no, excuse me, 311 trillion years of Brahma is.
So when we're in the Mahashab and there's no Mahabirthi left, it's not a big deal.
No.
He works on a different scale.
But it's yes, a slightly different scale.
But it's Maha.
It's unlimited Maha. Yes. Yes.
Shiva being the destructive principle, why is it that he's the one that's able, that's involved in the creation?
Because destruction is which mode?
It's tamas.
Yes. And so, and what is everything here based on? Yeah, so he's the, in other words, you could say he's the principle of the false ego, the false identity. Because that's the destructive element. Right? Yes. What, it's just like this, if you identify with the body, then how do you perceive what's happening to the body? It's destructive. If you don't identify with the body, then what do you care? You know, it's just like the father identifies with the front lawn, therefore there's the element of it being mowed, right? The kid does not, therefore he doesn't see the need. Right? Yeah. I'm not even going to bring up raking it. Yeah. Okay? Yes.
Maharaj, that explanation you made of the creator of the universes and then creator within the universe. Is that where the New Age scientists are starting to talk about multi-dimensional universes?
There, I would say that they can't get beyond the coverings. So their intelligence will go beyond that. So they're talking about within. They're just perceiving, from what I can understand, the various planetary systems and then the different personalities within those systems. Because all the stars and on the higher level, what you see, those are all persons. They appear to us as stars. If you go up there, you have people. That's why when Arjuna went with Maithili in Indra's chariot, when they got up high enough, he's seeing all these different people go moving in their chariots and doing this and that. He says, who are these people? He says, well, here we're known as demigods. Down on Earth, you call them stars. Right? So then they're getting into all these different things. So there's multidimensional. You have 14 planetary systems. Right? And then within that, as we see just on Bhumandala, it has, what was it, 7 or 9? I always forget.
Huh? 6.
7 varshas, right? So each of those has, and those seem to be connected with their particular deity who's connected with these different planets. You know, the 9 planets, you know, or 7 planets, actually, because 2 of them don't really have a whole lot of influence, yeah, on one level, yeah. Does that make sense? So you have all these different things. So yes, it is multidimensional, but the point is it's still happening within, you know, 10 directions and 3 modes with 24 elements. But they talk about as if there's unlimited, you know, so it's just, yes, there's so many ways that something can only function within its nature. So they're trying to ascribe a nature to something and define it at the same time as talking as if there is none. So that's where they get bewildered. That's why they can't figure out time, space, and probability. Right? Because they want something to work in one way, but at the same time they talk about, you know, say, okay, there's a tape recorder here. How many tape recorders are there? We'll say one. They'll say, no, there's millions. Yet each person will look at it in a different way. So therefore that mental perception is a different actual, you know, because it is there how you perceive it. So they get into that kind of, you know, that's what they do to keep themselves busy. But at the same time, as they talk about that, but it's got to have an exact definition of, you know, so how do you match those two? That they can't. It's beyond their ability.
So we're talking about Vedic science, and they're just talking about the speculation.
They're speculating within what is the phenomena that's within this universe. They haven't even got to the covers. Otherwise, they got to the covers, they could explain all the mass that's missing. Right? Because they can only account for like a tenth. Because of the amount of power that's there, there should be more. So that's the coverings, you know. But, you know, they don't know how to measure like mind or intelligence or false ego or like that. So even though that's much greater than the others, they don't really catch that one. Right? But otherwise, if it's not greater, why is it that these are what move the body? Your body moves because of the mind, intelligence, false ego, not because of the other bodies. Okay, it means if you go up and, you know, push somebody, yes, the body moves, but why is your body pushing their body? Because of the mind, intelligence, and ego. So the whole thing is that has more power, so that they can't relate with. Vishnu is the integral subjective portion of Mahavishnu. Hence, he is the great lord of all the other lords. The progenitor, Brahma, and Shambhu are the dislocated portions of Mahavishnu. Hence, they are gods with delegated functions. His own potency being on the left side of Godhead, Vishnu appears in the left limb of Mahavishnu from the unalloyed essence of his spiritual chit potency. Do we catch any? Means this is all very technical here. No? But Vishnu appears in the left limb of Mahavishnu, right? From the unalloyed essence of a spiritual chit potency. Do we catch any? Okay. Probably not.
That's why Radharani.
That's why the feminine is always on the left. You know what I'm saying? In the wedding ceremony, the girl's on the right. And once they're married, she's on the left. Because the connection is from the left. So it's not,
no, the chit
one, yeah, chit is the feminine aspect. So that means that left, so that's the feminine. Mm. So when you have Bu on the right, it's not that expanded from his right, it's expanded from her right.
Oh,
yes. Right? Yes. So she's in the middle. Her expansion to her right and to her left makes the three Shri, Bhu, and Nila. Right? So you get Shri, Bhu, Nila. Right? On each side. That makes sense? So you have a lot more going on.
Brahma's right hand man.
Huh?
Lord Brahma's right hand man.
Yes. 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 Yes.
What you were just talking about, is that related to the concept of the yoga pit? The original position?
Yeah, you could say in yoga pit you'd have that.
So it's created since time immemorial. It's not.
Means these are eternal principles. That's why you have the same person doing everything. So naturally there's going to be a common element. Like just like you have an artist. Now, every work that they do is unique in itself, but at the same time there's some common element that you could say this is from this artist. Right? So in the same way as the whole spiritual world, material world, everything about the two are expanding from one person, therefore there's going to be some common element. That's why we can use this formula of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana and apply it everywhere. Right? So then the Samandabhi Deya Prayojan, you get the masculine and feminine, their interaction, you get the Adi Daivik, Adi Bhutik, and Adi Adiatmik, you get the modes of nature, you get those elements of what is it? What do you call it? The Dravya, the Kriya, and the Jnana. You know, like this, all these things, are, because it's the same thing, but because you have within a personality, especially within the Lord, unlimited aspects, then you have so many ways to apply the same formula. So it comes out in so many different flavors. Does that make sense? Let us say you're not really hungry, and you're in a formal situation, and so many people around, and that someone offers you something to eat, but it's not like it's you're directly dealing with the host. Either people come around, little things on the tray, do you necessarily take something?
No.
What if you're sitting with friends, and they're having a whole scene, and laughing and joking, they got so many things to eat, you're not necessarily hungry, but they push it over, hey, you know, then?
You eat.
You understand? So you could say that's contradictory. So that's why these different formulas seem contradictory when they're applied. It depends on the mood. But it's still the same formulas. That's why it's a science. And that being documented, that's called tattva. Right? And so this whole science is great. The only problem is we're trying to get used to we're not the center of it. You know, God's the center of it, and that's kind of tough for us. You know, that's where the whole thing kind of falls apart. You know. Yes.
But for us to understand the mood, first we have to understand how it works. Not necessarily,
because the mood is what defines how it works. You know what I'm saying?
Even the pampa we're coming in, that
will
define how we look at the creation?
Yeah, no. It means the creation, there is facts. But the point is which facts you'll take as prominent, how you'll move through them, or what's important to you, that will maybe different according to the sampradaya. But here we can get into it, because you see, what are we dealing with here? We're dealing with Purusha and Prakriti. So this masculine-feminine aspect is very important. So for the Vaishnavas, that will be there, but whether it remains as formal or informal. Because otherwise, how do you have the Supreme Lord is being chastised by his internal potency? That doesn't happen in Vaikuntha. In fact, she's so much just in the mood of servant that you never really hear of any interact. It means when you hear of Lakshmi Narayan, what are they doing?
She's massaging
his feet, or what's fanning. The other? Fanning, or?
Serving prasadam.
That's when you're getting in, yeah, okay, when you're getting the pastimes, but generally you only hear of that in Dwarka, where we're talking about Vaikuntha. What's the typical, if you have a Vishnu Murti?
Standing there.
Standing there, or sitting on the lap, or, you know what I'm saying? It's very formal. Everything's very formal. You don't hear of these kind of things. So she's just taken as the supreme servant, and we're just serving her. That's it. But you don't have this interaction like you have in Dwarka or in Vrindavan. That takes more philosophy to appreciate. Does that make sense? Okay, dislocated portions of Mahavishnu. So this is the dislocated. It means they've separated, but at the same time, is they're portions of the Lord, right? Okay, Hiranyagarbha, the seminal principle, the portion of the Supreme Lord, but there are dislocated portions, while Vishnu is the integral subjective portion. So there's that aspect, but he's still Mahavishnu. But the other two are moods that are not Mahavishnu. But at the same time, they are him. But when they come into the universe, then you get the three guna avatars. You only have to deal with one, right? Yeah.
Is that the example that Lord Shiva is new, but he's
yoga. Yeah, so that's the element of this dislocated. Okay, text 16. Shiva, presiding deity of Ahankara. Then the universe became filled with Ahankara by the agency of Shiva. Brahma Samhita 5.16. So that's why since the universe is filled with Ahankara, that's why then someone in cultivating the element of Ahankara can feel that he is connected, you know, with the whole universe. You just connect in with that, the totality of a false ego. Yes.
Technically, it's like the permeating moon of the anchor is the substance.
There is the mood, and then there's the substance. In other words, you have the mood of I'm the controller and the enjoyer. So that's the original element of false ego, Purusha. And as we said, Shiva, he is Purusha, so for him it's not a problem. It's not a covering for him, no. But then you have to manifest that within the Dravya and everything. So therefore there's an element false ego. Right? So there's the false ego, meaning polluted consciousness, and then there's the false ego that is coming from, the mode of ignorance. You get that. Then you have the problem is the false ego coming from passion, the false ego coming from goodness. That'll make the mind intelligence false ego. So the gross body is basically an expansion of the subtle body. So if the subtle body is created from false ahankara in the three modes, then what's the body created from? Right? The same. But in a grosser form. So the body is based on false ego. The subtle body is based on false ego. And the reason we're here is based on false ego. So then from this, what can we conclude?
A lot of false ego.
A lot of false ego, okay. Yeah, he filled up the universe.
Half is water, half is the false ego?
No, the whole thing's false ego. But, it's a phrase. Because there's people down in the water also.
Why did Britain get a bigger share?
I'm not sure. It must be pious, some kind of pious activity or austerity. One of the original Britons, then they sat there and did austerity that nobody's talking about. What to do?
No.
Everybody can't be. We want equality, but everybody's not equal.
Some are more equal than others.
Some are more equal than others. Yes, a little bit.
Animal farm.
Yeah.
Everything is based on false ego. It's so difficult to overcome this, to get out of this.
No, but that's all you have to focus on. Of all the things you have to do, give up the false ego that I'm the controller and enjoyer. All you have to do is, I'm servant of Krishna. Krishna is the enjoyer. That was the point I was alluding to. So from this, what can we understand? That means the whole Mahatattva, the whole material sky is based on false ego. You get rid of false ego, then you're in the spiritual sky.
Like this, it sounds so simple.
It is that simple. Maharaj Katvanga did it in a moment, gopis in a moment, so it is possible to be that simple. But, as Krishna says in Gita, if it doesn't work that simply, because that's your first option, then the second option is follow the rules and regulations of Pancharatra. Then that's what we do.
There's a song where it's connected with Nityananda, who's giving very nicely this liberation. It has only a small price to get rid of the false ego.
Yeah, that's the opening of that. One of the songs is that he's completely free from false ego. He has no false ego. Yeah, he's only seeing himself as servant. Okay. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur further elaborates on the nature of Ahankara. The basic principle is the Supreme Lord Himself, who is the embodiment of the principle of existence of all entities devoid of separating egotisms, who is the embodiment of the principle of existence of all. Right? In other words, he's the existence of everything, but specifically He himself is the embodiment of existence for those devoid of separating egos, right? If I think I'm servant of Krishna, we're not a separated ego. Yeah. I think I'm the Lord, I'm the controller and enjoyer, that's separated ego. Yes. In this mundane world, the appearance of individual entities as separated egotistic symbols is the limited, perverted reflection of the unalloyed spiritual chit potency. And as representing the primal, masculine, divine generative function, Shambhu, it is united to the accommodating principle, namely the mundane female organ, which is the perverted reflection of the spiritual chit potency, Rama Devi. So you're going to get that element of separated, then that's controlled by Shiva. And if you're functioning within the natural, then it's controlled by Vishnu, right? So if it's controlled by Vishnu, that means Ramadeva, Yogamaya. And if it's controlled by Shiva, then that means we're dealing with the reflection of that. Perverted reflection of the spiritual chit potency. Does that make sense? This function, Shambhu, at this function, Shambhu is nothing but the mere material causal principle, embodying the extension in the shape of ingredient as matter. Okay. So he's what's causing it. Means, in other words, if we see in the Shringa Purana that when it's talking about the creation, then it's taking this aspect of it. Is that when you have pradhan, you add false ego, then you get mahatattva, right? So then you add it again, then you get false ego. Yeah. You add it again, you get intelligence. You add again, you get mind. You add again, you get ether. You add again, you get like this until you get. You keep adding until you get earth. So earth is the grossest manifestation because there's the maximum amount of ego in it. Yeah. It's just showing what is caught, because we know each one comes from the other, but the catalyst for that is false ego. Since the whole universe is based on that, we see the start of the creation is that, so you just keep adding that element, and then you get more and more of this.
You said mahat and then pradhan?
No, when you add false ego to pradhan, you get mahatattva.
Yeah.
Right? At the same time as the whole creation is called Mahatattva, because that's what's going to happen.
Yes.
Right?
Okay.
Again, when in course of the progressive evolution of mundane creation, each universe is manifested, then in the principle of Shambhu, born of the space between the two eyebrows of Vishnu, there appears the manifestation of the personality of Rudra. Yet, under all circumstances, Shambhu fully enshrines the mundane egotistic principle. Right? So no matter what the manifestation, the mundane, mundane egotistic principle, the concept of trying to enjoy matter, or the material, then is Shambhu all the way through, no matter whether you're in the subtle forms or in the gross forms. Does that make sense? Now, in the subtle form, the point is then he's dealing with the original energy, which is his wife. So there's not a problem, right? So for him, at no level is there, but he's the one who's representing that. He's the one who controls the false ego that we come under, right?
So, catch
this, is that, in other words, he's in control of it, but he's not affected by it. Right? So Vishnu controls it, but he doesn't actually directly deal with it. He expands as or transforms as Shiva, where he deals with it, but he's still, the principle of ego is the primary. And then these others are then manifested through that contact with the feminine principle. Does that make sense? So linga means that aspect of the controller and enjoyer. So when that contacts yoni, then you get the different kinds of ego that one tries to enjoy all the various aspects of this world. Is that what you're saying?
Subtle to gross in the 14 planetary system, means from the higher to the lower, right?
Yeah.
Like that.
But I mean, you also have subtle to gross in the way of just within each one of those, you have subtle to gross.
And both.
Yeah. It's just one may be more subtle, one may be more gross.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think we have time for the next. Okay. Thank you.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki
jai,
Janita Gaura Premana
ki jai.
No, but that's the point. Okay, one says we're never in the spiritual world. The other one says? Okay, in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
So that's two.
That's in between.
No, but we were never in the spiritual world, but then where were we? We only have two.
Okay, then
there's always karma and jnana. We never have three.
But there's we were with Krishna also, personally.
Yeah, that's the other. So, but in both of these descriptions, or any of these descriptions, what is the spiritual world? You understand?
Everything is.
No. Where is the spiritual world? What is their definition of spiritual world? It's Goloka Vrindavan. That's all. That's why they fight over this. So both are wrong.
What's the defining of Goloka Vrindavan?
That's right. Then what's the Bhagavatam? Is it defining Goloka Vrindavan, or that's the pastimes in Gokul Vrindavan? Right? There you see demons walking right in. There's envy, there's jealousy, all that, right in the spiritual world. They say, well, we can't be Goloka because you can't have these things in Goloka. And you can't, so therefore that aspect is right. You can't fall from Goloka. Okay, that's true. Unless you have prema. So the conclusion is then Brahman? This is all Mayavad's kind of stuff. Why Gokul, they're non-different. Why, they don't need these books. That's the problem.
And the beginning
Where is the Tathasta Shakti? It's where the spiritual and material energy are in the same place at the same time. That's the Tathasta. It's not something sitting out in the space like some home or something.
So they've been here eternally.
We've been where eternally? You understand? You're trying to define everything by time and space. So you're even trying to put time and space on the spiritual manifestation of Braj Vrindavan here. So you're trying to say, oh, we've always been in the material world. But Braj Vrindavan means Gokul Vrindavan is not the material world. Therefore, if you want to do good for yourself, give up contemplating this thing. Because all you're doing is putting a mundane aspect on the spiritual world. You get no benefit from this contemplation. The spiritual world is a spiritual world, and it's not according to time and space. If you have to know everything by time and space, you can only deal with the mundane. Know the limit of your intelligence. If one thinks that by my intelligence I'll understand all this, then that is false ego. And false ego is never any benefit for developing spiritual life. So the problem is both of these are correct on one platform, and both of them are totally wrong. They're correct that they're quoting from the Shastras, the Acharyas, certain aspects, but they're totally wrong because they don't accept the other aspects. So they're like, you know, Gotama and Jaimini and that, only accepting what parts support their philosophy and rejecting those that don't. They're not actually on the level of Vedanta. So, and these philosophies don't even get beyond the material world. They don't deal beyond the material world. Why? Because they want to function with their own mundane intelligence. So therefore, it's not going to be successful. Vedanta means you can accommodate both the spiritual and material. But it's by the grace of the Lord, not by one's intelligence. So if you want to stuff everything into time and space, then you'll always, on an absolute platform, be fail. Always. No question. Doesn't matter how smart you are. Because even the smartest person here, mundanely, how smart are they? Not that smart. Brahma, now he's smart. He's got four heads. And he can't figure it out with his material intelligence. It's only when Krishna reveals it through mantra, which means through devotional practice, then he can understand. That's why this is not an academic topic. Because academics can't understand anything. You understand? Because they're trying to, on this transcendental platform, they can understand things in the material world, limiting it to just what they can observe, ephemeral. Yeah. That's it. That's the limit. When you get beyond that, they don't have the capacity. It's just not part of it. It's just like, can a car fly? No, it just doesn't have the capacity. But they're saying, I can fly with my car. You know, and he hits a speed bump, you know, see, we're flying. You know, I told you. It's kind of like, give me a break. So therefore, using mundane scholarship as a basis to try to understand this aspect of a philosophy will always fail.
We just get into devotional service.
Yes. And then you either understand it or you don't. You don't worry about it. Because the point is that it either makes sense or it doesn't. Just like trying to explain to an 8-year-old, you know, the moods and intimacy between an adult man and woman. Is there any benefit? Can he understand anything? No. But basically, with hardly any explanation, a teenager will understand it. That's the point. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
that's it.
Thank you.
Okay, have fun.